Hey guys, and welcome to Lady Business Plus. I'm here with Jody to talk about Pacific Rim. Hi, Jody.
Hi, hello. I'm back again.
Back again for our second try at talking about our favorite SF movie of the year, yes?
Yep. This was a difficult one because I basically... I think that you probably agree with me because we've already talked about this, that we sort of tried to do it too quickly and we loved it a lot. And then a lot of people loved it and said really smart things, and I definitely was like, what I said wasn't smart, let's redo this. So that's where we are.
We didn't follow Jay Smooth's rule where he says don't worry about being first. We forgot that lesson.
Yeah, we did not follow that at all, I don't think. So, but it's good because it means that we can talk about all of the new stuff that we've seen and all of the smart people who have said things since we tried to record the first time. So I'm looking forward to that. So, where shall we start?
Favorite characters.
Yep. So, your favorite character. Go.
Wow, this is hard. Can I just say all of them?
That's wrong. Yeah, okay.
That's not fair. I loved Ollie. Like, even the douches, I loved them. Every character in this movie was so well-drawn. Like, even some of the ones that don't have speaking lines. I've actually come to really love Sasha and Alexis.
Oh, yeah.
Because fandom has done some really great and interesting commentary, criticism on their reactions in the background.
Oh yeah, I've seen that. Like the GIF that has like the analysis of the way they're looking at each other across the room.
And then there was this comic series, which I definitely have to like link, where they survive. It's like, I forget what it's called. Pacific Swim. I think it's what they called it. It's really cute.
That's cute, yeah.
And I'll definitely link that in the show notes because Rose showed it to me, and I cracked up for an hour.
Oh, really?
I just kept reading them and laughing and reading them again and laughing. It was great.
Oh, that sounds adorable.
No, if I had to choose, my favorite character would probably be Mako. I adore her. I adored her when I watched the movie. I adored her after I watched the movie and was reading everything about her and all the commentary about her character. It hasn't gone away. I love her as the heroine. I still think that this movie is... Like, I still think she's the main character of this movie. I know other people disagree. They say that Riley is one of the main characters, but I think this movie is hers.
Yeah, I do still think that the film tries to undermine that, but I think it is her story as well. She's so central to it, and bits of it are sort of through her eyes, and bits of it don't really include Riley at all. You know, like her, she has independent relationships apart from him. So I think that's right. I also really like Mako. I think it's impossible not to because she is the main character, and she's so interesting and so different from kind of the heroines that you see on screen a lot of the time. She's so much quieter, but also like I think that makes her a really big presence in the film. Like she almost creates this space around her that sort of says, look at me, listen to me, I'm important. Like the umbrella scene, the way that she's positioned in that to come out with that umbrella and the mystery of who's underneath it, and then she opens it up and she has like the flash of blue hair, and it sort of all goes on from there. My other two favourite characters, because like you, I like a lot of people, is Stacker, who is played by the wonderful Idris Elba, and Chuck Hansen, because I am a sucker for boys with daddy issues and dogs, obviously. So, and also I have like a massive thing for Robert Kaczynski, which is going to be the way I'm going to be saying that name. So,
that's probably right.
Yeah,
I'm really bad at names.
I'm not sure. I've never actually heard anybody say it, so I'm going to go with Kaczynski, who is Chuck. I know all the names this time.
This time you know all the names. You're not getting anything confused.
Hopefully not.
It's really not. It's hard. No, it's fun. Like, once you see a movie, it's like the first time you see it, it's hard to be like, okay, I know everything about this movie that I've seen once.
Yeah. Exactly. I want to see it again. Can we see it again? Like soon.
When does it come out on D? Like, when does it come out? Do you even
I
know?
think it comes out on DVD on the 15th of October, so I'm just waiting for it, really. I'm like, yay, I'm gonna watch it again.
We're trying to
Excited.
watch it again
So
and then send each other like emails written in caps like, I love this movie.
yeah, just things like that. Like, oh my god, why can't they make the sequel already? I'm so excited about the sequel potential. Are you? Like,
No, I'm super excited about it. Everybody in my social group is like, oh, I didn't make enough money. It's not going to get a sequel because it failed. But it only failed if your entire view of the movie industry is limited to the United States of America. Outside the US, it did really well and it made plenty of money to be considered for a sequel, which I really, really hope happens. I have no clue how they'll do it,
no.
considering that a lot of people died horribly.
Yeah, and the rift is closed, but did you see that thing in the comments on the post that we had at Lady Business, where somebody said that they basically imagined a way that it could happen and there could be more like rifts and more kaiju, and I was like, oh, that would be so good. Please let it happen like that. Like,
Oh, and please let Michael come back and kick more ass. I'm so excited.
I know. Just like, yay. But even if that doesn't happen, did you see, I think not I linked it to you, but it's a really short piece of fic and it's like about the aftermath, even if some the characters that are dead in canon are still dead. And I was like, oh, this is beautiful. It was basically about like how Mako and oh, what's Chuck's dad's name?
Herc.
Herc, yes, about how they like present to the world after, and it was like really stoic and political, and I was like, oh, I love this too. So I'd love one, even if there wasn't, giant monsters coming out of the sea. Although I would prefer giant monsters, but
There has to be giant monster fights.
What else? I mean, I just can't imagine it without giant monsters, basically. Although it would be nice, it would be fun, but it wouldn't be giant monsters and like Power Ranger vehicles killing everything. So I don't know. That probably makes me really shallow, but I do enjoy a robot monster fight. So.
So I think last time we talked about Raleigh a lot and how he wasn't a traditional masculine hero. The traditional masculine hero that's in other stories was Chuck, and the narrative in the movie shows us that you can't be a Chuck in this universe and, survive. And also, you're gonna get beat down for insulting Raleigh's BFF. Since then, a lot of people have released like screen caps from camera rips and whatever of scenes where Raleigh and Mako are talking or they're just looking at each other. And I have grown increasingly impressed with the way that the actor who plays Raleigh looks at Mako. There's this gif that showed up on Tumblr a few days ago where they're talking and Raleigh looks at Mako and then she walks away and he just follows her with his eyes and his shoulders drop like he's sighing and I'm like, oh God, they're so adorable. And he does this the whole movie where the very very beginning he's like, I can't drift with anybody, I lost my brother, I won't do it again. And then as soon as he meets Mako, he's like, sign me up. I love it.
I really like that he is like, oh, my brother, he died. I have the sad pain. And then he's like, oh, but sort of, why not try again and why not make it? Because he could have just been like, oh, no, definitely not. And they could have had to sort of force him into it almost. But he's like, oh, no, I really want to drift with Mako. If it had been anybody else, then we see in that fight scene that he wouldn't have. Which is nice because it's like their, special connection. They're like best friends meant to be. So yeah.
The movie does such a good job at, you can read it either way. I have a lot of friends who ship them, which is cool. I like that the movie left it open. You can decide for yourself. Because, I mean, generally Hollywood is like, guess what? The dude's gonna get the lady. Or else. Between them, you see them both, and like, they enjoy each other, they trust each other. It's not necessarily sexual. It could be if you want, it could be maybe in the future, but it's not right now. And I want more movies to do this. It's great.
I really like that it wasn't like the point, like the end of the film. It wasn't the point wasn't to get them to a place where they were like, had to make out. it was to get them to the end of the film, to the end of this particular story, which is a lot different than other films where the point is to sort of set up all these barricades that get in the way of the romance, and then at the end to like bring them together. And that's cool, but at the same time, it does get a bit repetitive, you know. I do like diversity in story types, and sometimes I'm a bit like, oh, this is happening again, especially in Hollywood. I just really like seeing something different, really, I think. Like, not that we can't have love stories, I really enjoy those, but I like seeing something else as well, you know, especially as somebody who's not involved in a romantic relationship. It means a lot to see different kind of endings, different kind of relationships come together like that, so...
We need more friendships.
Definitely. We need more films about, like, people being friends and family and everything, basically. Like, we just don't have enough... Romance does dominate in the film industry, I think.
Bad romance dominates in the film industry, is what I think you mean to say. Because so often, it's not really romance. It's just a dude being rewarded with a lady-shaped object.
Do you know what? Because I've been to see quite a lot of the, like, Shakespeare comedies this year. Mm-hmm. And what I noticed is that when Shakespeare wrote plays, there were all these plays where, at the end, the woman got rewarded with the questionable man. To modernise, it doesn't seem so much like a reward, because these guys are often jerks. But the women, like, they win, and they get social acceptance, and they basically, they don't get shamed and thrown out of society, and they get a man who, in the end, falls in love with them. And I thought about how different that is in the Hollywood industry now, where it's all about guys getting that reward, you know, and tricking the women into relationships and things like that. Whereas back in, you know, in, like, these classic plays, there are all these plays where the women are the people who trick the men with clever schemes and who get what they want at the end. And I thought, how depressing that we've come so, you know, so far in time. And we appear to have gone so far in the opposite direction in sort of media on that particular scale.
I'm watching The Sentinel with Rose.
Mm.
And I'm also going through a lot of clips of old TV shows. And I've also noticed that back in the 90s, there was a lot more just plain diversity in the way that things were shot and the background characters, like both color and gender. But it felt like between like 1999 and 2006, I just didn't see a lot of that when I would watch media.
Mm-hmm.
It's like everything got extremely white and extremely male. But now it feels like it's coming back around again. Like we were doing really well, and then white people panicked. I don't know if that happened or not. But just in the stuff that I watched, the stuff that I saw, it went from being a little like, it went not great. It wasn't perfect, but it wasn't also completely the same. Now that there's more criticism about it, we're seeing it flip back. And Pacific Rim did okay with this. I was actually kind of... Everybody sold this movie like, oh, it's diverse, and there's such and such characters who are characters of color. And I'm like, oh, that sounds great. But then I went and watched the movie, and I realized, okay, so you have several characters of color. Only one of them survives. And that's Mako, the Chinese triplets.
Yeah,
the triplets are killed really early. Stacker dies, and fine, that's okay. But if Idris Elba becomes the Sean Bean of science fiction action movies, I'm going to punch a baby. I cannot handle.
Yeah,
and I just can't. Did you see Prometheus?
No, we talked about this before, and I said I didn't, but mostly I didn't realise that Idris Elba was in it. I knew that Charlize Theron was in it, so I thought about watching it. But then everybody said it was sucky and, like,
it's really terrible. Can horror-y. I spoil it for you?
Yeah, okay.
So at the end of Prometheus, Idris Elba's character is the captain of the Prometheus. He's the starship captain. Mm-hmm. And he and his crew basically go on a suicide run and run the ship into another alien ship to keep it from getting off the little planet. And so he dies horribly.
Oh, yay.
And I was just like, okay, all right, whatever. So then I see Pacific Rim, and he dies horribly. Even though it's, like, heroic or whatever. No, and also no. I'm just done. He's forbidden to take any more roles in science fiction films where he dies. I hope he's listening to Idris Elba. Stop. Just stop it.
Just stop. Yeah. Yeah, that was the worst thing. I must have sent emails to like loads of people just going, why did this happen? Like, I don't understand why, because I did not see that coming at all. I was really stupid and A, didn't know what the end was going to be, and B, just sort of went, Idris Elba is in it, and because Idris Elba is big, really big over here, like I just assumed he'd be fine because he has that sort of immune star quality thing. But no, it is Hollywood, and so he has to die. And so when it was like, when he started bleeding, I was like, shit. And I was sat in the cinema for about 10 minutes, just really, really pissed off. Just going, what? Why? Why am I here? What is happening? Why is this happening inside of my head in this cinema with like about 10 people in it in the middle of the day? Just freaking out. And that made it like 100 times worse because I didn't know it was going to happen. I was like, if I'd known this was going to happen, I would have prepared for it, right? But I was not prepared. I thought we were going to have a lovely story where Idris Elba made it to the end and was heroic and, you know, cancelled the apocalypse. But no, apparently we're going to have a heroic death. I do not approve at all. So, yeah.
I knew that was coming because I watched the season 2 of Teen Wolf, and when he started popping pills, I'm like, I've seen this before.
Oh man. When I look back on it, I think it was really obvious. But I was in this bubble of like, Idris Elba will be fine because he's fine. He's, you know, he's sort of like Will Smith and he survives. And then no.
He's not like, over here. He's famous on Tumblr, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But like,
yeah.
In the general cultural pantheon of celebrities for America, he's a black dude.
Yeah.
And he's foreign. So he's got 2 strikes against him.
I get that. It's
really frustrating because I think he's brilliant. I haven't seen anything with him that I don't like.
I'm almost like convinced to watch Luther because it doesn't sound at all like my kind of thing. It actually sounds horrifically unlike my kind of thing.
Yes.
But I'm sort of like, Idris Elba isn't, and the woman who plays Ruth in it is amazing. She's just the best actress. So I'm like, oh, maybe I'll watch it and I'll just hide behind the pillow at all the bad bit. But, oh, did you know this? This is on a tangent, but I only found it out the other day and you might like to know it. Have you heard of Ultraviolet?
No.
No? Okay. Do you want to know what it is? It's a very short TV series where Idris Elba is in it and it has vampires. And also, do you know who Jack Davenport is? If you don't, you really should because he's super hot. But, like... They are in it, and Jack Davenport is like, finds out about vampires, and then Idris Elba is, I think, in this sort of secret vampire cabal thing, and I was like, why have I never ever heard of this? This sounds excellent! So I have to find that now and watch it. I think there's only about 8 episodes or something.
Oh, if you do find it, I would like it.
Yes, I'm going to look for it, so, yeah. See, I really liked Stacker, but at the same time, I'm like, every time you talk about how much you like him, you're like, but also, we have to talk about how dead he is at the end, so it's unfortunate.
Yeah, it's just really, I'm just not happy.
No, it's not happy. But he has so many good moments throughout the film as well, like everything. And the bit where, was it you who said that only Idris Elba could have carried off that cancelling the apocalypse thing?
I'm sorry, that writing was horrible. That was just awful.
So bad, but he was like the only one who could
like
pull
it off. He took some really awful ham-fisted writing and made it work. Like, I don't know how, but if a white guy got up there and did that, I would have been like, whoa.
Yeah.
Back the fun bus up.
if Riley had been doing it, I would have been like, alright. Okay.
No, pass. Yeah.
That's not going to work out.
So, yeah. I just think that he has such presence in whatever he's in that he just managed to... He was just like, he read it and was like, fuck yeah, I'm doing it.
Yeah, he really... He's got, like, that sort of gravitas thing going on. So he was perfect for this role. I want him to be in more films. More films where he doesn't die, please, Hollywood. Very important.
And I loved that this movie made Stacker and Mako's father-daughter relationship such a central part of this movie. I was totally blown away by the fact that two characters of color were the emotional center of this film.
Yeah, they really were.
This is just from my perspective, and because I've grown up in the South, in Arkansas, and I've never lived anywhere else. I remember as a kid in school, we were watching some movie and two black characters, a man and a woman, started kissing, and the teacher turned it off and wouldn't let us finish the movie. I don't even remember what movie it was.
Wow.
But that's kind of the environment that I grew up with. And it's really kind of refreshing just to see that and see that it's hard to explain. When you grow up in such a place where you're just told, not deliberately told explicitly, but just told to the way other people react to the experiences and relationships of non-white people, that they're not important. It's really startling to see it be so important in something that you love and that you can love without being told it's wrong. And I still get that even now. I'm 30 years old. This was over 20 years ago. I still just, when I see it, I get taken aback because I internalized so much of that. So it was pretty cool. I love that part of this movie.
And everyone is so, all of the criticism that I've read has been so into that as well. I think that's really nice, is that people have really focused on that relationship as the center of the film. And they've they've paid a lot of attention to it, and they've spent a lot of time talking about how it works, which is really, really great to see. Like, instead of, focusing on the Rally Mako thing, there's plenty of that about, but it's not, I don't know, it could just be, the circles that I move in, but I've seen a lot of, Idris Elba and, I can't remember the name of the actress who plays Mako now.
Rinko Kikuchi, I think. I might be mangling her name.
Yeah, I've seen lots of, shots of them, all of their scenes together where they stand together, and, the shoe-holding scene, that's, everywhere on Tumblr, and I'm like, oh, this is really lovely.
The scene where Rally says to Mako about Sacker not letting her drift with him, he talks about obedience, and she's like, it's not obedience, it's respect. And my heart kind of, melted out of my chest onto the floor to a puddle. Because it's so, it would have been so easy for this movie to, make him, overbearing and make her rebellious. But they don't do it. They, genuinely respect and love each other and care about each other. It's not an overbearing relationship at all. And I really appreciated that.
My favorite scene is the protect me one. Before he goes off to die. God, this is just the most depressing podcast we've ever done. but, where he's like, oh, it's your turn to protect me. And I was like, oh, that's so adorable. And also that she can, because we've seen her. She's, she's competent at fighting. He trusts her to bring them home. And I think he sort of knows that she'll survive, because doesn't he say something like, she's going to carry on or something like that. I can't actually remember because it was a long time ago. But yeah, I think he knows that she's going to protect them as they go in to do their job, and then she's going to carry on in the world. And I was like, oh, I love this. I really wish you weren't dying, but still,
It reminds me of this piece of art, and I'm going to have to find this piece of art, where it's got Mako and Raleigh, and Raleigh's wearing the Mako fan club president t-shirt, and then Stacker appears, and...
Oh my god, I've seen that!
And Mako wanders off giggling, and Stacker takes off his shirt, and he opens it up, and he's like, Mako fan club founder.
Yeah, I've seen that. That is so good.
It's so perfect!
That's really good.
And it's so... That's so different, where... it's not two men fighting over a woman, it's two men fighting over how much they admire and respect and love this woman who is so talented and smart, and I get really warm feelings about it.
It's really nice. I don't know, I think when we talked about it before, I was like, oh, the scene where he, glows? And I was like, oh, this feels a bit iffy, because...
No. He became Jesus.
Yeah, I kind of got completely around that, so.
It was perfect. That scene was perfect. That baby Mako's reaction to Idris Elba having the glow of sun behind him, that's Tumblr.
But have you seen the ones where they just focus on her reaction on that little girl? And I'm like, this little girl is like freaking amazing. Her face is just all of the things.
I know.
And I'm like, this is just, it's ridiculous. And she's not even in it for that long. And I was like, stole it. Like, she was like, I only get to be in this film for 5 minutes. You are all going to be looking at me. Do you know what else we should talk about? We should definitely talk about the scientists, because I know that you enjoy the scientists. And Tumblr also enjoys the scientists.
We should definitely talk about the scientists, yes. We
should, yeah. I always got pulled into, well, I did get pulled into, but I didn't have time to finish it, into reading scientist fanfic. And I was like,
oh, we're going to fix that. We're going to fix it.
I just need some time. I just need some time to read. Like, and then I'll be on it, because...
I wish you just, I wish that you weren't such, I wish you didn't have to stare at screens all day, so I could just get you, like, a nice, calm, black and white e-ink e-reader, put all the fanfic on it. It's not like a screen, it's got
it's
e-ink.
So, like, you know, when my birthday comes up, I enjoy printouts of fanfic. I can
oh my
read
god.
That book.
We're going back to the 90s for Jodi.
Dimes. Yeah.
Yes. 80s and 90s. We're printing out fanfic on our inkjet printer, and it's taking 25 minutes to get the story out of the print.
Yep. And then we, like, put an illustration on the front and color it in by hand. I also would enjoy that. So.
Well, now I know how to get you to read some long fic, you know?
That is it. Just print it all up. Just kill a tree for it. Yeah, it's fine.
As long as you promise to recycle after you finish.
I promise to recycle it, yes.
I will also send you the bookmark on the AO3 for the stories that I want you to read. And you have to go bookmark them and recycle the paper. We have to, as fans, we have to really concentrate on our carbon footprint.
We do, yes. Yeah, laptops, they're not burning up the atmosphere. It's fine, it's fine. Paper is the real problem.
So, yes, I enjoy the scientists, Herman and Newt. As soon as they appeared on the screen, I was like, who the fuck are these guys and are they in the movie? Like, the very opening scene where they're, like, stomping around in the rain before Mako appears. Or is it after? I can't remember, but I just remember the scene where they're yelling at each other. And it doesn't stop. Like,
They never stop
picking at each other. It's fantastic. It's the stuff of this is stuff slasher dreams are made on.
The bit that I really like is the you know when they drift and you see her. Is it no? Which one is which?
Hermann Gottlieb is the he has his cane, and then
yes, that's when you see like Hermann's past. You know, and there's that little scene of him. Where he's, like, quite obviously, in my mind, at some sort of, like, boarding school, and the kids are bullying him, and he, like, is sitting in the corner with his head in his hands, and I was like, this is adorable. Why? Oh. I just had all of the feelings around that, because I was like, oh, I love it. And I really liked that, like, I don't know, because do you think before they drift that even though they, like, pick at each other, they still have some sort of respect for each other? Or do
no
you think
of course
that...
I don't think they could work together and not and I think that a lot of it is put like I think a lot of it is put upon and I mean because there's been a lot of meta about how they wouldn't act like they do and they would get fired for being the way they are or whatever, but like they say in the movie that they're pretty out there as far as the available people to work on the project because the program is being shut down. And this is, they're scraping the bottom of the barrel for scientists. And so you got these two, like, on the fringe of scientists coming to work together. And I just feel like you can't not have respect for the work people are doing in that sort of situation. So even though they're picking each other, if they didn't have respect for each other, they probably would not be able to be in the same room.
that makes a lot of sense. Because I was sort of like... you probably haven't seen The Big Bang Theory because it's not really your...
No, unless it's like explicitly SF, then no, probably not.
No, yeah. Well, it's more like SF fandom culture. It's all about these like guys who are really huge SF geek kind of guys and they're scientists. But I was kind of like, oh, I really hope it's not a Sheldon situation where like there's this one guy and he's awful, he's the worst person ever. And his friends are all really smart, but he's like this super genius. And so he has like no respect for them at all. for their achievements. Like, he writes off one of his friends because he only has an MA. He doesn't have a PhD. And I'm like, I really hope it's not one of those kind of things. So, like, I like it best your way, to be honest.
There's actually a picture that somebody put together of Raleigh and Mako after they've drifted. And then a picture of Herman and Newt after Newt drifted with the piece of kaiju brain.
Oh yeah.
And the similarities between the way scene is framed and the way the actors are interacting. When I saw that happen in the movie, I'm like, sold. That's all I needed. I'm good. But also, there's a novelization, right? And in the novelization, Herman apparently has a wife and a baby.
Really?
Yeah, so P.S. I hate the novelization. But Bern Gorman, the guy who played Herman, with the fans were like, so what do you think? Are Herman and Newt, like, together? And he's like, yes, totally. And he totally, like, shunned the novelization. He's like, no. They're totally together. I'm like, yes.
That's great.
So I'm fine. I have permission from one of the actors to ship his character. So,
oh my god, I love that.
Apparently, I don't know if it actually happens in the novelization, but apparently they made the word kaijus, like, canonical. And and Rose had a meltdown. Because there's not supposed to be an S.
Oh, I see.
It's supposed to just be kaiju.
It's like kaiju, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So a lot of the things about the novelization, I'm just kind of like, eh.
Well, the novel had to come out, like, super, super fast, because I don't think they had any idea that it was going to be novel-y, like, that they would be able to sell that.
I don't know when it was out. It was out, like, a week after. I know it was out at least a week after the movie. I'm not sure. I think they do a lot of, like, tie-in stuff like that just automatically now for some things.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, they're still doing tie-in stuff for, like, Supernatural, and I've seen tie-in stuff for some other shows that you wouldn't think they would have tie-in stuff, but they do.
It's always really weird to me, that side of stuff, because I don't generally go for it, and I don't really know why, because
need your novelization, because what I'm going to do as soon as the movie's over is go to the AO3 and look up fanfic. I don't got a paper or anything.
Yeah, I think it's that, and I think it's because it's not actually made, a lot of it's not actually made by the creators of the show, so I'm kind of like, if I could have more stuff that would be, like, extra canon, I'd be like, brilliant. And this other stuff is, it's a weird mix of, like, canon and fanfic.
I think the writer, Travis Beachman, who is actually great to read and follow on Tumblr, he's a great example of how to interact with your fans when they're having discussions.
Okay.
Yeah, he's a good example of that. And yes, he answers a lot of fan questions. I think he approves of the novelization. But here's, like, I don't know, I'm weird. Something is canon, I don't have to necessarily pay attention to it. Like, if I want to ship some characters together, I'm going to ship some characters together and ignore your pesky canon that it's not possible.
Yeah.
I don't worry so much about what's canon.
It's nice to have more of the official stuff, because that all tends to be written in a very consistent voice. Do you get what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. Whereas fanfic is, it's other people's voices often. Even though they're writing the same story, they're writing a completely different style. Which is why, although I really like fanfic and fan art and all that sort of stuff, I also really like canon extras, because it means you get more that's sort of written in, that's often written in the same sort of style with the voice very close to the original. And, you know, you do go to the canon because you want stuff that comes like that. So more of it is always also hooray. I like all the things, basically. But for some reason, I just don't get tie-ins. I would never think about reading, like, a Doctor Who novel for some reason. I don't know. I don't know if it's, like, a mental thing. But then when the Pacific Rim novelization was out, I was like, oh, I want it. I desperately. And now I'm like, oh, I'm sad I bought it because they did a thing that I'm not going to enjoy now that you've told me. So.
Well, I don't know. I can read something, and if I don't like it, I'm just going to ignore it. I don't take stuff that's not in the original. Like, Final Fantasy, right, when I was in those fandoms. In Japan, they release these things called Ultimanias, and they have lots of, like, additional canon information, side story stuff. Like, there's a lot of mythology for the stories in those books that aren't in the games. So they're really nice to read and maybe, like, incorporate into something if you're, like, writing some meta or writing a story. But I don't necessarily think that they're required to make sense or discuss the canon, because they're not in the specific, they're not in the piece of the novelization can tell me all at once that Herman is married with, you know, a baby, but that wife is not in the movie.
That's true, because that would be another female character, and then I don't know, maybe it would explode from all the lady bits.
Yeah, it was specific room was so diverse. One lady speaking, two, like, major speaking lines.
Yeah, there's other issues to it that I thought all built up to make it a really, you know, sort of a diverse picture, like Herman with his mobility.
Yeah, there was a scene in the very beginning of that movie where Newt slows down. Like, next time you watch, when you watch the movie, watch for that moment. I was just like, ah! When somebody pointed it out to me. Yeah, I was just oh my gosh, you're right, that did happen.
Yeah, I remember reading somebody's piece about that, and I was like, I didn't notice that, but I was like, oh, that's really great, I want to look for that now.
So, then, I mean, I have lots of stuff I'm going to look for now, truly. I'm just going to rewatch this movie, like, with the pause button going, oh my god, that's so great. This movie did so much characterization that wasn't stated. It was in how the actors reacted to each other. It was in the design of the set, the colors that the movie uses. All, like, so much of the movie's characterization was not verbal. And I think that's what really made it stand out. Looking back on it, like, in a critical light, that's what makes it stand up, because they did so much with the background and with non-verbal communication.
I really like that piece that you linked to, you know, about the colours. That was a really interesting look. It sort of made me look, like, again, at a lot of other pieces of visual media. You know, like, not because of colour schemes, but because of, like, looking at things like where people say, oh, the dialogue is so schlocky, and then thinking that, well, dialogue is really important to visual media, but at the same time, it's visual, and I don't think that a lot of commentary focuses on that, unless something is a particularly high art piece of entertainment. Do you know what I mean? So, unless it's sort of, you know, like Breaking Bad or Hannibal or something, people don't tend to focus on the way that the visuals are composed, because there aren't obvious signals that these visuals are really important. In Hannibal, it's all stylized, so it's all sort of focuses you towards that. And I thought that was really interesting to see somebody take a piece like Pacific Rim and say, but look at all of the little things that seem to be happening in the visual. It was really interesting.
Like, costume designers and all the people who work on the stuff that we're seeing, besides the actors, are really important to how we perceive a film. Because, I mean, the dialogue, yes, is important. But everything else that's happening around those characters is also important. And I think the Pacific Rim really made an impact with this, like, in the way they chose, especially the color thing.
Yeah, that was so good. That was so smart.
It's changed how, like, I watch media now. Like, now I look for different things. This movie has, like, really expanded the way that I view other things that I'm watching now. Like, I read Hello Taylor, right, with her costumes. Yeah. And I never paid attention to clothes before I started reading her stuff about costume design. And now I can't unsee it. Like, I'm watching and I'm paying attention to what characters are wearing, and I'm seeing how it's, like, informing the scene. And it's really amazing to, like, be able to experience TV and movies in, like, these different dimensions besides just what the characters are saying to each other.
It's really interesting the way that, like, that relates to the way that we read things as well. Because, like, if you're reading, you get all of that in, you know, like, people say, like, oh, he was wearing this set of clothes, and the clothes that they're wearing, or, like, the makeup of their faces, or lots of things like that, that really informs the way that you view the character when you're reading. But when it's visual, I think a lot of the time, unless you are someone like Gav, who, like, really focuses on that kind of thing, we almost sort of tend to skim over it a lot in criticism. I don't know, I think maybe because a lot of us are writers, and so we're not as geared up for graphical a lot of the time.
I have a lot of trouble. I mean, I wrote to Asia a few weeks ago, and I'm just like, how can I better critique visual media? I want to learn how to, like, look at it. I want to learn how to see stuff that's happening that's not obvious to people who don't, like, haven't studied it. And she gave me, like, lots of different links and things to read. And she was just like, watch a movie with the commentary, because a lot of the times the director or whoever is commentating on that piece of media, we'll talk about lighting, and I'll talk about what the characters are wearing, and they'll talk about the structure of the scene, and you'll learn a lot from the way the directors are talking. And I started doing that a little bit, and it's making me way more aware of stuff that's happening on the screen that's not spoken. Of course, it's also very tiring to do it that way, so I don't recommend you do it all the time. Like, sometimes it's okay to, like, take your brain and turn it off and just watch something.
Yeah. I think it's a lot of, like, it is a completely different discipline. It's like when you, it's like, I don't know if when you were going through school you ever took art history type modules and things like that, and, like, with, you know, where you look at how a piece of art is informed by the history of the time. But that it's sort of that kind of discipline where you have to, like, almost flip the way that your brain is working and focus on things coming out of the images. Whereas we're sort of, I don't know, because I have a very, like, textual background, I'm sort of taught to focus on, like, the words creating these images, but not really to focus on what the image they create. Especially that's also, it's kind of a personal thing for me, because I don't have a very, like, seey brain, so I don't read an image and think, oh yeah, I can see that exactly in my mind. I sort of, all the, you know, like, he was wearing this kind of hat, was kind of like completely lost on me in books and stuff. So it is really interesting to look at things a completely different way.
So yeah, that's what I did with Herman and Newt, basically. I didn't really pay attention to what they were saying so much. I was paying attention to the way they related, like, physically, the way they related to each other, whatever. Predisposed to slice dudes. It's kind of my thing. So I don't know if they had been friendly or what. I don't know. I can't tell you. When you do that with visual media, I think that's why it's easier for me, because I've been doing that exact thing with other visual media. I mean, I do it with Supernatural all the time, and I do it with Teen Wolf, and so it's just kind of an extension of, God, can you use the term slash goggles anymore without sounding stupid? Because let's just go with that. So it's just an extension of something that I was already doing, but I've, like, expanded it to not related to, you know, dudes fucking.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like seeing things that aren't said, basically. Which is, yeah, sort of the basis of slash fandom, is seeing things that aren't being said on screen, because who the hell knows anymore why. The one thing that I, well, because basically we're not going to sit here and go, oh, Robert Kaczynski has a dog for the next 20 minutes. a bulldog. Oh, he's so adorable. And I don't really want to talk about how stupid it is to put people in to do accents when you could have employed people from the country to do the part.
Yeah, I know. That was a little annoying. Yeah.
Oh my God, I don't really know Australian accents except outside of Neighbours and Home and Away. So I was like, oh, this sounds Australian. And then there were all these people going, no, this is like the most stereotypical Australian accent ever. And I was sort of like, why didn't you just get someone who was from Australia?
I did that a lot when people play parts in the South, and I'm just like, nope.
Yeah, I was just really happy that we didn't have to have people playing British accents this time, because that drives me just up the wall, American films where people are doing British accents, and I'm like, okay, that's nice. I don't enjoy it.
Well, I mean, for my part, I'm sure there's plenty of, like, actual Australian workers who would like a role in a movie. Why didn't you cast them?
Yeah, I don't even know. There's a little bit of me that feels like a bit disloyal saying that, because I watched this interview with Robert Kaczynski, and basically the place that he comes out of is he used to be in this massive soap over here, and he was, oh, he's amazing. He basically played this, like, completely messed up character, and he was just, he had the, like, he did some awful things, and he was great. But he was talking about how after that, nobody would give him a part because no one could see him as anything except Sean from EastEnders. And the only reason he has moved to America now is because that was the only place he could get roles at all. And so I'm kind of like, oh, it's really nice that you got a role in Pacific Rim, but I'm also like, why couldn't you have just been English? Why couldn't you have been playing one of the British characters? They could have just given him a part on Stacker's Team or something, you know, and found another Australian dude to do Australia. Like,
oh. Or they could have role flipped it. They could have made Chuck a lady.
Yeah, an Australian lady.
And yeah. I would have been okay with that.
That would have been great, yeah. Except she should not have died at the end.
Yeah, no. That would have been.
Yeah.
Maybe the mom. Her could have been a lady.
Yeah. That would have been great, right? Like, that would have been so interesting. Like, you know, it would have been like a Sarah Connor kind of thing, but in Pacific Rim. That would have been really cool. Yeah, and Charlie Thurman as well. Like, I didn't realise that that was Charlie Thurman until everybody started posting things about it. And I was like, why have you got Charlie Thurman doing possibly the worst American accent I've ever heard instead of somebody from America? But the only thing I can think is there must have been really deep British ties in this film, and so they cast a lot of British actors. Otherwise, I'm just really confused. But anyway, so I said that I wasn't going to talk about the accent.
And then you talked about the accents
About
for
the
5 minutes. No, it's
accent,
fine.
yeah, that was fine. But I wanted to ask about, you know, the opening scene, where they do that whole montage thing and they walk through the and they make it very obvious that they don't want this to be a film about militarization. How well did you think that that all came off in the end? That theme of like anti-military action film and not making military action into like a plaything almost.
Well, they ended the movie with a nuclear weapon.
Yes,
So
they did.
possibly not as well as they thought they did. I don't, it kind of felt like a grassroots military. Does that make sense? Because it's obviously like these people are obviously they have a lot of firepower, and it's obviously an international effort. It's not explicitly
American, yeah.
American. Once you are in the movie and you're in the Shatter Dome and you're seeing Stacker bleeding from face holes, and you're realizing that the program had caused a lot of problems in the beginning. You're seeing like all the breakdowns in this little tiny effort to save the world, and it becomes really obvious that it's a very small effort. Even though it's huge and they have huge robots and the monsters are huge, the effort itself seems very, very tiny. And I don't think, when I think of American military, I think like as a massive opaque ball of guns and like ninjas. I don't know. I don't really think about America.
Ninjas?
I don't know.
What?
I'm sure we
I don't
have.
think that's the thing. I think you watch too many films.
I just don't know enough about our military.
If this film wasn't made by Guillermo del Toro, I would have said it was somebody trying to say, oh, we're anti-military, but then being like, but the military is pretty cool, so we want to put some military stuff in. But, you know, like the way that they make it a resistance instead of part of the military. I would have said that felt like fudging it. But because Guillermo del Toro is like so vocal about not being anti-military but being opposed to military conflict, that I just can't, I know that we're not supposed to let like creators inform the way that we view the media, but I can't sort of get away from that because it does inform it, you know, because it sort of says, well, he's not trying to fudge it, but he may have still not successfully changed what he was doing within the frame of an action film, I think is what I'm trying to say. That's sort of, because I sort of felt like it said, oh, we're not the army, we're a resistance, so it's okay to look at us blowing things up with big guns and, you know, having people dressed in uniforms and stuff, you know, basically having massive firepower, so.
I think it comes down to like whether, like in what situations are military actions legitimately required? Are giant monsters? It's like, is that a good reason? I believe that sometimes there's going to be violence because we're just human and that's how it goes. And we're too different. We're gonna throw a tantrum and probably shoot at each other a lot. And I know that's informed by where I grew up too. We really like our guns here. And but I also think that 85% of me is like, talking is the best way to get things resolved. Let's use our words. But you can't really talk to giant monsters.
I think it's one of those like culture things, you know, like where someone makes a film like this in our culture, and it's and our culture informs how we have to perceive it, because like we are, you know, the world is a highly military culture. So when someone says, we've created this film, but look, they have to because there are big monsters, that's a really valid narrative reason. But it adds,
Oh, look, we have
you
to.
know, it's added
Somebody,
stuff.
like, oh, we have to do this because somebody bombed our buildings. Or, oh, we have to because somebody sank a boat. Oh, we have, yeah, oh, we have to is a great reason when it's giant monsters in a fantasy movie. But it becomes less applicable when you take it out
that's it. And
I don't want the first thing governments say to be, oh, we have to. I don't want that to be the first thing at all.
Exactly. And I think because we have such a high action movie culture and also such a generally aggressive world culture, it's just one more little brick. But I sort of hesitate to say, oh, it would be really hard to do anything different within an action film, because I can imagine that people could build something different. I think that it doesn't quite do what I would want a film that tries to advertise its reluctance to be involved in military culture at the very beginning to do. I kind of felt like I was watching that bit, and then they just sort of went, oh, but we forgot that bit, we did it in the first 10 minutes, and now we have to shoot some people and some monsters and stuff. And so I was kind of like, I just wish they'd done more with it, really. I wish they'd brought it more into the film, made it more central.
But they might in the sequel. That's definitely going to happen, Hollywood, pretty please.
Yeah, they might in the sequel. That's definitely going to happen. Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
I hope so. Yeah.
Well, that was heavy. Maybe now we should just go ahead and do some recommendations and bring it down a little.
Yeah, let's.
Do you have any Pacific Rim recommendations, Jodie?
What, like, of things? Well, I've seen a lot of stuff.
You're like, do you want all of it right now? I have this folder of 800 links.
Well, the easiest one is just to say, go and watch, I'm really sorry about this, but I can never get this username right. I think it's Chyla, the woman who did the guest post for us, who's excellent, and she made the Pacific Rim fan video of my heart. So, like, just maybe you should just go and watch that again. I've watched it about 8 times now, and it never really gets old. So, yeah, that's my recommendation. Go watch the fan vid.
Out of 800 links that you have saved, that's your recommendation.
That is genuinely my recommendation. That is my top recommendation.
You have
I've seen lots. I have some others, but I think they're ones that you've seen. Like, I really like that the scientist fan art. Where they're like on the sofa together.
Right, that's
really
great.
Like that. That's amazing, right? Like, yeah.
Yes.
But go forth with your recommendations.
I have a few, because I can't control myself. The first is a fic by Chisholm called I Forget the Difference Between Seduction and Arson. And it's a Knut Herman fic. And I read it a while ago. And it's really kind of dark. It's a little dark. It's about, like, post-traumatic stress and the aftermath of the movie. It is really good, and I totally recommend it. It's, like, 10,000 words. So, you know, that's 15 minutes of reading. You can do it.
Yeah.
And my second fic is by Saikaval. I can't pronounce that username. Sorry. Person who wrote this. It's called How to Train Your Kaiju, where Nude is out doing, like, some kind of reconnaissance on a beach. And he finds like a baby kaiju. It sounds really stupid, but it's great. Like, if I wrote it, it would be dumb. But this is a great story, and I highly recommend it.
It sounds like Teeny Tiny Dragons, basically. You found a teeny tiny dragon and brought it home and loved it.
Yes, it's a great story. Yeah. And the other things are some fan art that I'm going to put in the show notes with Riley and Mako. Then the last is some meta about, it's called Co-Pilots, the Two Not Love Stories in Pacific Rim. And I did reblog this, so you probably saw it. But I really liked it. And it's about how they compare the stories between Riley and Mako and Herman and Newt, and how they kind of dovetail with each other. And I think it's really interesting to compare their two stories, their two not love stories, because, like, both of these stories were not explicitly romance at all. If you could look at them and compare them, they sort of become romance, if you want to read it that way. And that's it.
We should just link the entire contents of that to Google Docs, even if we didn't mention it in this.
No, we're going to do some... We'll just do a supplemental reading section.
Yeah, we
read
should.
Read all this
we
stuff!
Yeah, read everything. Why aren't you reading it? Please go and watch the film again. We need to talk about it.
Yes, like, we do.
That's the thing. It's like, I've seen a lot of stuff, but not a lot of it is coming out of people that I talk to. There's, like, you and this Chyla, and I'm like, please, more people go and read and then talk about it with me. Like, stop just saying, it's really good. Be like, let's talk in detail about this. It's very important to my... I actually think that this might be becoming my fandom, which is like sad because not enough people are in it. So
I'm in it.
Yeah, I know you're in it. That's great. And
well, we'll see how it does when a movie comes out on DVD and makes it more accessible.
Oh my god, there should be like a million people going. I really wish I'd gone to see it twice in the cinema now. I'm just like, why were you stupid and didn't go and do that? Like, everyone should definitely go and see it and then come and talk with us about it in the comments, please.
So, thanks for coming on and talking about Pacific Rim with me
Yay!
Again.
Yay! It was fun. I enjoyed it much more the second time round.
Less pressure!
Yeah, not so much pressure. Yeah, okay, that was good. Yeah, I enjoyed it. Thanks for having me again.
You're welcome. I had a great time.
Okay.
Thank you so much for coming, and thanks everybody else for listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye!
Bye!